Sleeper 2020, a series of conversations with explorers, artists, and thinkers in the world of hospitality experience and design.
This podcast was brought to you in association with RH Contract. Restoration Hardware is a multi-category supplier of luxury furnishings, and our B2B division, RH Contract, is specialized in the global hospitality, commercial, and residential segments. To learn more, visit rh.com/contract.
Hello and welcome to this Sleeper 2020 podcast. I'm Guy Dietrich, editor-at-large of Sleeper magazine. Today we are speaking with Klaus Endlinger, the founder of The Slow Collective. Often referred to as a visionary, your foresight for the merging of hospitality and design hit the zeitgeist just as the boutique hotel movement took off. He led design hotels through the tough days post 9/11, launching a number of initiatives. These included the Made by Originals campaign, highlighting the personalities behind the hotels, starting up the Design Hotels Future Forums, now called Arena, and in 2017, developed further, a traveling laboratory for experiential hospitality. You'd already begun developing your own projects around the time of the financial crisis in 2008-09. Pop-ups, the Papaya Playa project on the beach in Tulum, Mexico, opened in 2011 and was followed by another in 2014. The growth and success of Design Hotels saw Starwood acquire a controlling interest in the business in 2011, but your hotel launches kept coming with La Graña, a magical farmhouse in the middle of Ibiza, which is just part of what you are now doing with Slow Collective.
But before we start all of that, Klaus, maybe a quick little warm-up if you liked. When was the last time you got on a plane? Where were you going? Where were you coming back from?
We were actually on ski holidays in Austria, close to Ischgl, where this whole disaster kind of started. And after this, I went to Berlin for supposedly, you know, Hotel Investment Forum, which got canceled, as well as ITB got canceled. But there were a couple of friends coming from around the world. So we still decided to meet in Berlin. And then from there, I made my way back here to Lisbon. And since then, I haven't really left the house except for walks with the dogs. But fortunately, we have a nice garden, so we can do some sports activities with the kids playing soccer every
Let's,
day.
Let's look at how the Slow Collective came into being.
I mean, this whole idea started like 10 years ago when I moved to Tulum, living in the jungle and coming up with this idea for Papaya Playa project. And what initially was planned to be a 6-month sabbatical turned into a 7-year living out of the jungle. And the interesting part of that whole thing that I flipped the classical concept of how we live our lives, being in the cities, working from the cities, and then, you know, spending our weekends or weeks in these beach destinations and or mountain destinations or other leisure destinations to find balance and to relax. I totally fall in love with that concept to work on a different pace remotely while not giving up the chance to go and visit the cities and travel the world. And in that couple of years, which I did spend in Tulum, I was more and more intrigued by this slow and, in combination, intense life between the remote place and the city. And I felt that it was giving me more time to digest what I have learned on my travels by going back and figuring out and connecting the dots. So this was when I started to get fascinated with this with this slow life as a
something
philosophy.
I think we are now almost forced to accept with these lockdowns, a chance to reflect, a chance to take maybe an emotional audit. But you were doing this, say, 10 years ago.
As you mentioned, shortly with Design Hotels, we had, you know, we were obviously in this industry and with 9/11 and with Lehman Brothers, we managed to get through these two crises, which both crises gave us and Design Hotels as a business always a huge boost. Because, you know, a philosophy I was following through life was always like when all is well, everybody is kind of, you have a lot of people who are hitting their heads on the ceiling and it's hard to stand out. Yeah. But when there are not so good times and there are crises, then it's really about them who get up the first and are best prepared for situations like this.
So you think that the 9/11 and the financial crisis of 08-09 were actually very good for Design Hotels?
All of these, you know, crises I have always witnessed that there was a slight movement going on before. So before September 11, I mean, there was .com. We took Design Hotels public in 1999. You know, everybody was, you know, so many success stories, so much money spent for maybe not so many smart things. But there were already people questioning, you know, in these days, early 2000, it was about the new definition of luxury. Yeah. And then 9 years later, after Lehman, when the new definition of luxury was already, you could see it throughout many industries that brands were changing the way they were communicating, changing their flagship stores, changing their designs. I think it got another boost in 2009 after the financial crisis. And so what has been happening now in the last 10 years, I disagreed with lots of things which I've seen in the industry over the last 5 years, because, you know, what I was missing, that there were not so many brands out there who were looking for conscious growth and say every new thing we are building, we want to make it better. There were just many new places opening just to have another place. And it was just by growing and being more, but not necessarily better. And that was one of the reasons why, you know, when I decided to sell my shares in Design Hotels and prepare for a career step after the career, I was sympathizing with the whole slow movement. And I was like delving deeply into what has happened there in parallel to our world over the last 15 years to see how where my main competence obviously is in hospitality. But the movement around slow is bigger than hospitality. And you know, it all kind of started in the end of the 80s when there was a gentleman called Carlo Petrini who was protesting in Rome against the opening of a McDonald's restaurant next to Piazza di Spagna. And the slow food movement, you know, took off, and it's maybe worldwide the most recognized movement in combination with the term slow. When I started to look for registering slow as a brand, which dates back 8 years ago, then there was not so much registered around that whole subject. But in the last 5-6 years, there has been a tremendous movement also into this direction where. And it goes through all kinds of industries. Yeah, it's in retail, it's in architecture, it's in design, it's in city, it's obviously in travel and in hospitality. So for me, the last 2-3 years were about to think what exactly, you know, this collective, as we want to call it, can be going forward. And is it strictly hospitality or is it beyond? What I've been hearing from, you know, friends around the world in the last 2-3 years, that people were getting more and more exhausted. We know that, you know, there are all kinds of mental diseases out there, that the speed was so difficult for most of the people just to cope with the speed. Yeah. The breakup of relationships, you know, the breakup of families, the horrible kind of nutrition which is served in most of the supermarkets around the world. I mean, there's so many things which are wrong on this planet. And in a way, this lockdown in which we are, you know, if we want to see something good in is that it's like everybody can really reflect now. And I, you know, I speak to my friends around the world and I hear them more and more. And in a way, they're like saying, well, you know, it's good to reflect and digest. And what I don't even want to go back to the life I had before. So I think the awareness for new lifestyles, and this is, I think, where slow has become, as a movement, has become a kind of I would almost say it has become a luxury. And from there, I think in the next 10 years, it will much more define more and more people's lifestyle. And it does not necessarily has to do with pace. Yeah. I mean, as in 2004, Carl Honoré, who wrote the book In Praise of Slow, yeah, he was saying, you know, it's a cultural revolution against the notion that faster is always better. The slow philosophy is not about doing everything at a snail's pace. It's about seeking to do everything at the right speed, savoring the hours and minutes rather than just counting them. And I think there's so much truth in what he was saying. And I think this can be applied tremendously well in hospitality and translated into experiences, architecture, design, destination making, place making. And I think, you know, we are, from this point of view, living in an exciting time to finally go back and reinvent and not just copy paste what we have been doing.
So Klaus, with regard to La Grange, it seems that some of those limitations you mentioned actually made the property more desirable. Would you agree?
I would agree. And I think this is how this is how good places have been launched in, you know, before the internet and in the old days, you know, less, you know, this beautiful marketing team kind of like all these words and, you know, which were trendy and using them and picking them together. And then the operations guys sometimes were lost on that whole thing, delivering that promise. So not saying that we managed it from the beginning. It also took us a while. It took us a while to find the right people. But now we have the people who really, you know, appreciate working on the farm. And I think, so they're totally passionate about what they're doing and they're doing this on a daily basis. And I think this then has brought in these, you know, real supporters who have, you know, then old school word of mouth helping us to present the place. And since then, every year we're trying to make the experience and the facilities.
You just took the words out of my mouth there. I wanted to say
the farm
this idea
better.
Of word of mouth being the way of presenting a property to the market. But that's all very well when you only have 11 rooms and you're privately funded. You don't have to deal with shareholders. You haven't got thousands of rooms to sell each night. Nevertheless, let's look perhaps at the other venues that you're looking to put into the Slow Collective and how they fit into this this bigger picture.
So what I have been seeing in design hotels, one of our KPIs was always the average size of the property. And for many, many years, this was always 78. And it was only the last 5 years when we all of a sudden saw a decline there. And especially on the leisure, in the leisure experience, yeah. So we saw that there were more, you know, rates were going up and properties were just getting smaller. And if you look at, what's just happening recently. I think the latest Four Seasons in Megève in the French Alps is 40 or 41 rooms. Yeah. So I've seen this trend towards the smaller property in general, through all kinds of brands and countries and service levels. So I think this will continue, and this is also our, you know, one of our core ideas for how we wanna develop. And I even try to avoid the word grow, because it's, you know, we want to go very strategic about where we believe our core customer will come from and what destinations these, you know, guests will look at, by not limiting ourselves to these very commonly known destinations, because there are always these next two destinations. And I think these next two destinations will become more and more important in the years to come. And we hopefully learn now that we are not applying the same mistakes to these new destinations as we have always been doing in the past.
When you say these next two destinations, are you referring to two destinations or just the next ones to come?
Yeah, exactly. Milos or Mykonos or Menorca or Mallorca, or you know, is it Melides rather than Comporta, and so on and so far. So I believe there is a good chance now for, you know, interesting, beautiful destinations, unspoiled destinations in the vicinity of maybe more well-known destinations.
Do we really need to be finding new destinations, taking up more of the world for our hospitality needs?
That's a very good point, because, you know, if you're hypocritic, then you would maybe want to say now, you know, you're bringing the evil to the next place. So this is also one of the reasons why we said, you know, we would rather, I mean, if it's an activity in a destination like what I'm just explaining, you know, we want to make sure that this is rather, you know, super small. It's very respectful to where it sits. We wouldn't touch any place which would have more than, let's say, you know, 40 rooms. Yeah. I think in these destinations which I'm talking about, it would be rather maybe 20 or 25. But what I believe is going to be really the big next thing is the entertainment, or the model which we have kind of created in Ibiza, and bring this to the farms around the metropolitan areas. And we believe that in the future we will spend much more time in the vicinity. I'm not saying that we will not travel abroad. I think we will travel abroad, but maybe not in the frequency as we have been doing it, and in the fastness. We might want to go to South America, but maybe we go to Peru, but instead of, you know, doing the 3 days Machu Picchu, we will maybe spend 2 weeks there again. I think there will be a revival of these holidays, as, you know, I mean, I grew up with my parents. Our summer holidays were 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and we were going to one destination, and from where we were making, where we were doing our excursions. So I think we will travel much more consciously, and we will bring with us more time. What we have learned in with our remote working and schooling and so on so far, that, you know, we can afford it. Yeah, we can take this time and enjoy and learn more about a particular place which we decide to travel to.
Yep, very interesting. Very interesting. The next big thing, though, is this programming idea, you think, within the farms, as you mentioned, near to large urban areas.
you know, this programming we have witnessed over the last couple of years, it's already became an essential part, because the customer is already, you know, they, even when they go on leisure, they want to do something with themselves, not just laying on the beach. So the intellectual exchange, but the intellectual exchange or any kind of exchange is more in order also to connect it and to meet new people. And ideally these people, the stronger your message of your property is, the more aligned your guests will be and the more easy it is to put them on one communal table, because they will have maybe shared interests, shared values, and therefore more to talk to each other about. Yeah. And through programming, no matter if it's music, if it's conversation, is it film, is it art, you can steer this, because you can create a certain kind of a filter to bring in the people who share the same interest.
Let's see. Let's hope for the best. So, Klaus, we've got a whole bunch of different venues there within the Slow Collective. Is this going to be a new portfolio of hotels? These small hotels you mentioned, mainly in resort areas, or are they going to be urban venues like the campus in Berlin? Where do you see that heading, or is it just still experimenting right now to see which one works best?
No, as I said, we are approaching this very strategically. And at the moment, you know, we're in talks with a lake destination in the Alps. We are talking with a high mountain destination in the Alps. We have we're working on a working farm with a community, with a kind of a festival campus and farm school half an hour outside of Lisbon. We are working on a salon style project in the center of Lisbon on the border of Graça and Alfama, which is small, like 13 rooms and a restaurant. That's where I live at the moment.
Okay, I think we could develop that in quite some way. I think it's quite challenging, though, if you look at this idea of community and bringing people together, when perhaps actually what they really want is to be alone.
Well, I would disagree that people want to be alone. I think there are people who are scared, yeah, and I think there is lots of, you know, things going on there, which, you know, in the world at the moment, which are based on fear and stuff. But then there are people who say, you know what, we're still eating on one table together. Will that be, you know, different in, you know, that you're going to go to sit right next to a stranger on any restaurant table at the moment? For sure not, you know, but people you appreciate, you share, you know, also history together, and you know they're well or not well, and have they been in touch with someone or whatever, you know. But that, I think that's a current thing. I think looking into the next, in the immediate kind of future, it for sure goes about size. Yeah.
Now, as you mentioned, hotel size will also, I think, become smaller or become more popular, smaller hotels. So will events. Gone are the days of 300,000, 30,000, 2,000, 3,000. But smaller events, like you say, 100, 150 people, I think people will be more keen, much more keen to attend those than bigger events. But let's move on, Klaus, to look at what might be happening over the next couple of decades in hospitality design in particular, how that will look going forward.
I hope that we will be more bold and to really create new spaces for new experiences and not just copy paste. I mean, over my years in design hotels, I've seen between 400 and 500 applications per year of hotels. And, you know, I must say most of it was just a copy of a copy, you know, and we were not brave enough to step out and to say, you know, how can we And obviously the architects and the designers, they're following the need for their developers, you know, and they go out and they come with a book, and behind the book there is a big CPA firm who gives you the stamp so that you become bankable, and because this has been done for the last 20 years and this is why it's all this uniformity and everything is the same and it's just different textures in the inside. And I hope that, you know, there is this new boldness out there and that there is not just like orienting things on what have been done.
Sleeper 2020, a series of conversations with explorers, artists and thinkers in the world of hospitality experience and design.
This podcast was brought to you in association with RH Contract. Restoration Hardware is a multi-category supplier of luxury furnishings, and our B2B division, RH Contract, is specialized in the global hospitality, commercial and residential segments. To learn more, visit rh.com/contract.